Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Standing up for workers, what a pro-worker labor department has done in response to unsafe workplaces. A new day at the NLRB. And today on the show, it's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers and the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Welcome to the Monday, August 30th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Justin Walsh is going to be our first guest on the show today. Justin is the training director for IBEW Local 567 out of Portland, Maine. Website is IBEW567.com. And he's going to talk about his role as training director and the future for the IBEW, that local, in the northeastern part of the country. And there's some good things happening. You've been hearing about solar and wind power, charging stations. I mean, there's a lot going on, and this is all part of President Biden's agenda, Build Back Better. And the AFL-CIO has often said it's Build Back Better with unions. And you got to salute what the president did back in June, and this is all posted on the Local's website. Vice President Kamala Harris and our Labor Secretary, Marty Walsh, who we're going to feature this Labor Day a week from today, they travel to Pittsburgh for the first meeting of the White House Task Force on Worker Organizing and Empowerment. It was a roundtable discussion, and it surprised a whole lot of people. I got a comment here from Lonnie Stevenson, who's the head of the Electrical Workers National. He said, you had the vice president and a secretary of labor walk into a union hall, our hall, and sit down with a group of union members for 2 hours. Their only agenda was to learn about union organizing from the experts, from the people who live and breathe it. The workers around the table were the VIPs that day. Is that something else? My God, how refreshing to have that atmosphere for workers in America. And Justin's going to pick up on that because there's a lot of people in organized labor, especially the IBEW, really excited about what lies ahead. Andrew Tinker will be joining us later in the show on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. And he's going to get into three things altogether. Number one, there's a piece of legislation which would essentially unwind what happened in the state of Ohio some years back called House Bill 6. And it's dealing with a scandal at one of the utility companies. And hopefully consumers will see some of their bills rolled back a little bit. We're also going to talk about disconnections. And hate to say it, now's the time to think about prepping your home for winter. Yeah, fall is right around the corner. And it's important that you know the simple things that you can do to save energy in your home. And the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council does that so well, so well. So Andrew Tinkham will be joining us as our second guest on the show. Well, I have said on this show many, many times since Biden got in there and Marty Walsh became Labor Secretary, things have changed in Washington. Well, on February 24th of this year at a sewer repair worksite on High Street in downtown Boston, Jordy Alexander Romero, 27 years old, and Juan Carlos Gutierrez, who's 33, they both died after a dump truck struck and pushed them into a 9-foot-deep trench. For their employer, Atlantic Coast Utilities, its predecessor company, Shannon Construction, their owner, Lawrence Maloney, and successor company, Sterling Excavation, the incident is the latest in a long history of ignoring the safety and health of employees. After an investigation by the U.S. Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration, the agency cited the Wayland, Massachusetts Trenching excavation and underground construction contractor for, ready for this, 28 willful, repeat, serious, and other than serious violations. Given the severity and nature of the recent hazards, the predecessor company's history of violations, OSHA, used what they call its egregious citation policy, which allows the agency to propose a separate penalty for each instance of a violation. So the total is $1,350,884. A lot of money. Chief among the violations was the company's refusal to train Romero and Gutierrez and other workers to recognize and avoid work-related hazards. OSHA also found Atlantic Coast Utilities failed to conduct work site inspections to identify and correct hazards, including the risk of being struck by construction vehicles and other traffic, crushed or engulfed in an unguarded trench, and being overcome by oxygen-deficient or toxic atmospheres in that trench. I mean, they didn't care about anything. This is what Marty Walsh had to say. Two hardworking people lost their lives because Atlantic Coast Utilities put its own profits over workers' safety and health. The failure of employers to follow federal safety and health regulations designed to keep workers out of harm's way is absolutely unacceptable. This is yet another reminder of why the department's mission to protect workers' rights and ensure safe working conditions is so darn important. Now, prior to the incident, again, this happened earlier this year in February, OSHA inspected Atlantic Coast Utilities and Shannon Construction six times, and cited them for a total of 14 violations, including willful, repeat, and serious violations, with fines of just over $81,000, of which $73,000 was not paid and has been referred to debt collection. Maloney, again, this is the guy in charge, and his companies ignored the OSHA citations and repeated demands for abatement of the hazards. While two families still mourn the loss of their loved ones, this employer has ignored safety violations, failed to pay fines, and shown a total disregard for the safety of its employees. That comment from James Frederick, the acting assistant secretary of labor for occupational safety and health. And he pointed out, when you fail to train your employees properly, you deny them the most valuable tool they can have. You know what that is? Knowledge. If they knew what was going on, there's a good chance they'd be alive today. Hats off to Marty Walsh and the team at the United States Labor Department. Again, Marty's going to be on the show 1 week from today. The NLRB issued an opinion last week charging an aluminum manufacturing company with Section 8 violations after firing an employee who wrote "whoreboard" at the top of the overtime sign-up sheet. That's right. The employee was protesting the company's unilateral imposition of new overtime procedures under which employees needed to sign up for overtime on a sheet an entire week in advance. Okay. Well, after the NLRB ruled that the aluminum company violated the National Labor Relations Act for this activity, which was 3 years ago in 2018, the D.C. Circuit remanded the case on the basis that the agency failed to take into account the company's other legal obligations, namely to maintain a harassment-free workplace under state and federal equal employment opportunity laws. But the board found that the employee was disciplined for exercising the protected activity of protesting the new policy, noting that similar profane language had been tolerated in other contexts by the employer. So the board determined that writing "whoreboard" on the sign-up sheet was not so egregious as to result in a loss of Section 8 protections. Profane language in a workplace. That never happens now, does it? You're protected. You're protected. Just remember that. In a separate ruling, the NLRB held that a nursing home in New Jersey violated federal law by unilaterally modifying employees' health insurance plans. Can you believe that? First, the nursing home clearly violated its duty to bargain by terminating the health insurance plan of its 150 employees without even informing the workers or the union that they were doing so. Think about that. You think you have health insurance and all of a sudden you find out that your boss got rid of it. That's what happened here. The union reached a settlement with the nursing home to withdraw the NLRB charge, which included that the nursing home would pay employees' health care bills during the time they had no insurance, implement a new health insurance plan, and bargain with the union over a new collective bargaining agreement. Now, none of that would have happened if they didn't have a union. You know that. One more here. Federal unemployment aid is set to expire in about a week. Yeah. In about a week, September 6th, for the roughly half of the states that have not cut off benefits already. That means workers will not be able to claim federal unemployment benefits for the week starting September 6th and onward. Nonetheless, the Department of Labor has offered guidance on how states could renew the benefits by offering what's called periodic or one-time relief payments to workers currently on unemployment. It is reported that President Biden has previously urged states with high unemployment rates to take up this offer. Now, whether or not they're going to do that, that remains to be seen. Nonetheless, more than 11 million people are expected to lose their unemployment benefits on September 6th. And we have time for one more here. And as I've been talking so much about the National Labor Relations Board, there are good times ahead, and I say that because David Prouty, who was formerly the general counsel for the service employees, 32BJ, that's their union, along with Unite Here, he worked for both unions. He is officially on the board of the National Labor Relations Board, which will cement a three-seat Democratic majority. The Democratic board is expected to overturn many of the more employer-friendly decisions during the Trump era. And we talked about that on the show. And when we link up with Joyce Goldstein, which will be on the second Friday in December, she will bring us up to speed on some of those decisions, because Jennifer Abruzzo, who is now the general counsel, said in a memo just a couple of weeks ago that that's what's going to happen at the agency, and now they have a Democratic majority. So things are a-changing in Washington. All right, we have to take a quick break. Justin Walsh on behalf of the Electrical Workers Local 567 coming up next.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Buildings, bridges, skyscrapers, and more. Structures that are the face of our cities and towns were built by members of the Iron Workers Union. That's why it's important that our workforce of over 130,000 iron workers continues to be the safest and best trained in the field. With 154 training centers, we invest over $90 million annually in safety and training. We're growing the next generation of union iron workers. There are so many reasons to put your trust in our iron workers and their employers. Learn more about us at ironworkers.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. Well, if there's one trade that's bracing for the future, it's the electrical workers. And joining us on our live line right now is Justin Walsh. And Justin is the training director for IBEW Local 567 out of Maine. That's IBEW57.com for their website. And he's here to talk about the future. Hey, Justin Walsh, welcome to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, you're right. I mean, definitely the future is electric vehicles.
Without a doubt. And it was exciting to see Mike Fiore. Now, this is another local. He's out of Pittsburgh. Not a fan of Cleveland. You know, we're a Cleveland Browns town here. Pittsburgh Steelers are not friendly here. But he's with Local 29. And we had him on the show because he got to introduce the President of the United States when he announced his American Jobs Plan. I mean, it was an exciting moment, obviously, for Mike, and an exciting moment for the entire country. But let's talk about the electrical component here. And, well, first, let's get a little background on Justin Walsh. You're the training director. What about your background? How'd you get involved in the union, Justin?
So I grew up in a union household. I grew up in a paper mill town. So my dad was a pipe fitter, paper town that basically 90% of the people employed in the town all worked for the paper mill, small little town. But, you know, I kind of went away from that. A lot of union people kind of want their kids not to do the trades. So I, you know, went to college, was doing a whole different track and just didn't really like what I was doing. I had moved back to Maine. I was running a retail store, and I joined the electrical apprenticeship, and, you know, everything kind of led to there, and I became the training director. And so now I'm kind of back in the trades and back in the unions, and it was just a big circle. But I love it. It's great. It's real busy, and like you said, there's a huge electric vehicle market out there. If you just look at how much of our economy right now is spent on, you know, internal combustion engines and gasoline and fixing them. And, you know, every year, just a little bit more and a little bit more is that people are going to be plugging their vehicles in. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's the future.
Oh, yep. Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, so you bounced around a little bit. It sounds like you found your home here with 567. Let's discuss the local first. How many members right now, and what's the outlook as far as jobs go?
Sure. Yeah. So we are. So history, a little backstory. So we just, in 2015, we celebrated our 100th anniversary. We started in 1915 in Portland, Maine with five members. The reason I know that is because I was on the 100th anniversary committee. And so we did a lot of backstory. So it was really cool to see all this stuff. But we were primarily a paper mill local. Maine was a huge paper mill state. And, you know, we had 600 something members back in the 80s when the paper mills were booming. A lot of those have gone away since then. And so we've had to kind of shift gears into more of a commercial, quasi-industrial market. And so now we're at like 280, which is our pretty high for, you know, what we were probably down in the 200s back, you know, 5 years ago when everything was kind of slow. But everything's going great now. We get a lot of what's called an open call. So we have contractors looking for journeyman electricians, and we don't have enough journeyman electricians to fill the calls, which is, you know, pretty unprecedented for us. And a lot of it's based on solar. You know, just the demand for more electricity and more clean energy is just out there. And, you know, to kind of bring it back to electric vehicles is that's going to, you know, I mean, if you look at just the way the electrical market is going to increase as everybody is bringing their car home at night and plugging it in. I mean, the utilities, municipalities are going to have to keep up.
Well, they're designing the cars differently, and I know GM and Ford, GM said something like half their fleet's going to be electric, or a bulk of it will be electric within the next 10 years, which is right around the corner. That being said, there's got to be charging stations all around the country. Is that something that the IBEW would get involved in as far as building? Because I know, I'm pretty sure that's part of the bigger plan that Biden wants to do. Is that right?
Yeah. And we're definitely getting involved in that. And, you know, it's a big thing as far as not just when you look at like personal vehicles, but when you look at like, fleets for companies. You know, I just simply took electric vehicle charging sticking class where you get certified to do all this. And the person that was teaching the class was an IBW member on the West Coast. And he was saying that, like, some of the UPS stations out there have switched almost all their vehicles over to electric vehicles. You know, so you could have all these fast charging stations, you know, and the DC voltage. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of safety there. One thing I found out, what I didn't realize, then when I started thinking about it, I was like, that makes sense. They were like, you know, you put four or five charging stations outside of a business, even if it's a huge office complex. They said those electric vehicle charging stations will be the largest load, electrical load on the building. Because when you plug those cars in, even if it's only 20 or 30 amps, it's continuously drawing 20 or 30 amps for maybe 7 or 8 hours. So it's like I said, it's going to be a continually every year, just more and more business.
I like the sound of that. That's a great future here. So to prepare for that, Justin, what's your local doing? I know you're the training director, and it's still difficult. There's a lot of people that don't want to get involved in the trades. That seems to be improving because they're looking at all the job opportunities now, and there's a lot of these kids that have gone to college, and they come out of college and they don't have a job. And sometimes that's when they decide to get into the trades. I know, like, you bounced around a little bit, but the bottom line is, how is that looking for especially the apprenticeship programs?
Oh, it's looking amazing, but exactly what you said. I would say that our apprenticeship class is made up of probably about 50% people that are changing their careers and maybe already have a family, and they've decided, you know what, I can't work in an office, or, you know, I don't mind working in an office, but my, you know, sometimes the college debt that they're doing, I can't go back to school. I don't want to do this, but I can't afford more college debt. And then the other half are people that usually come like right out of school, you know, right out of high school, maybe do a couple years of tech. But yeah, it's we've had, I think we probably did 150 applicants this year for maybe 35 spots. And it's all word of mouth. Like, we don't really do a lot of advertising. We do some, like, I do a lot of visits to, like, high schools and stuff like that. And we're even talking about even going down as far as visiting middle schools. But it's all word of mouth. Like, you know, one person gets in, and then that kid talks to this other person. They see him. They haven't seen them in a while. And they're like, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to be an electrician, and I'm making this amount of money. And it's so busy because of all the solar stuff that they're paying, like, you know, above the normal pay scale. They're paying, you know, per diem. You know, some of these kids are 19 years old, and some of them are getting $120 a day per diem. And they weren't. They were still, you know, living at home. It's a lot of money from they're 18 or 19 years old.
Oh, I know. And when they get those big checks, they're out buying their F-150s trucks right away. I know how it works.
It's
almost like they won the lottery or something. No, that's really exciting.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, the one thing that unions, well, the building trades, and you have the multi-employer plans, and if we can speak to that, because, Justin, as you know, retirement security is not all there for a lot of people. And with the building trades, they emphasize, you know, that putting that money aside for later in life. Because when you think about it, when you're in your 60s, you're getting a little tired, you're getting a little beat up. You want to sit down and relax and enjoy that, what they call the golden years. And how's that sell for your local, to the young people? Because a lot of times they just don't understand that right away. What's your take on that?
So, yeah, and 100%. And that's why whenever I speak to them, I say, look, I know this doesn't make it. You don't care about this. But the way our pension plan is set up, whether you want it or not, you get $5.10 an hour put in, and for every hour you work, put into an account for you. And you can decide how to invest it. You can be aggressive. You know, you don't have to be super aggressive. But, you know, I just talked to them about, like, look, when you retire – people are living longer and longer and longer in retirement. You know, you can live 30 years in retirement, and that's 30 years worth of paychecks that you have to have. And you got to figure, like, now that's how long people live, right? But 20 years from now, I mean, the advances in medicine, how long are people going to live after they retire? So, like, if you just do the simple calculation, they say you need, like, 70% of your income when you retire to live off. So if you're making $60,000 as an electrician here, you know, you do the math at 30 years, you're talking about 700 to $900,000 a year. But then if you just, but you know, and you can have that with an with working for the IBW, but you gotta, you know, it's one of those things where they don't see that. And that's why it's a great selling point for people that we get to join the union that are, you know, a little bit longer in the tooth, and they start to see that, and they start to understand that. But the young kids don't. But that's kind of the great thing about the pension is whether they want to or not, it's there.
Yeah. I remember back in the 80s, and you may recall when Reagan was president. I don't know how old you are, but if you're not as old as I, which you probably are not, there was a lot of concern about Social Security, and then they had to revamp Social Security. And they should continue to revamp Social Security because there's more older folks today than there were, say, 30, 40 years ago, older population. But I remember going through those times and saying, I'll never see that Social Security. And there's a lot of people saying the same thing. Well, here I am. Guess what? I'm collecting Social Security. And it's a good thing. And there's a lot of people in that boat. And it's so important that we strengthen those programs, just like what you said about pensions. Justin, I'm getting off the subject here a little bit. Can you hang with us for another segment on the show?
Sure.
Okay, I want to get into the strength of unions. It's really important, and we're seeing in various states. In various states, there's a pushback when it comes to organized labor. I want to get into that and more. Justin Walsh is on our live line. He's a training director for the IBEW. We're talking 567 out of Portland, Maine. We'll continue with him. And we have Andrew Tinkham on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council later in the show. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with prostate, breast, or any other cancer after taking Zantac? You may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The Heat & Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And keep in mind, you can check us out on five different platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just take a minute and do this. Sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and eventually give us a rating. 5 stars, always appreciated. Definitely appreciated. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Justin Walsh. Justin is the training director for IBEW, that's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, 567. Website, real simple, IBEW567.com. We're talking about the future for the IBEW, and it is a bright future when you think about electric vehicles, batteries. I know the infrastructure plan that Biden has been, well, there's several plans. I mean, we're part of the way there. There's a bigger picture ahead, and that is to kind of modernize our entire infrastructure with broadband. There's so many things that we are behind on as a superpower when you take a look at other countries. Let me ask you this, Justin. Have you ever had an opportunity to get outside of the main area? And I'm hearing unbelievable things out of like China, what China is doing for their infrastructure. And, you know, we've lost a lot of jobs to China. And I'd like to speak to organizing, too, because the solar panels, for one, you know, they talk about bringing solar panels in, and these are panels that are made in China. We could make a whole lot more here. Biden is pushing the Made in America plan. But have you noticed what other countries are doing when it comes to their infrastructure, Justin?
I haven't seen a ton, but I know, I mean, it's a huge push. It's, you know, anywhere you look, you know, there was so much money spent in the 70s and 80s that, you know, all that infrastructure, all that stuff is just can't handle, you know, whatever capacity we have now, the amount of people and the amount of things that we plug in, the amount of things that have electricity. So, yeah, I mean, it's a huge issue. And as far as the imported solar panels, I know that I think it's Sharp makes solar panels in Tennessee, or they did years ago. You know, the issue with importing any of that stuff comes down to price, right? I mean, people want everything cheap. And they want to install it cheaper, and they want their solar, array up cheaper. But, you know, there's a cost there that they're not seeing. And if you're not willing to pay more for American-made stuff with American-made benefits and supporting Americans, then, you know, it's the other side of the coin. And I think sometimes we can count back of that.
Let me ask you about the electrical grid, and maybe you could speak, obviously, to New England. And as you well know, you know what happened in Texas back in February when it pretty much shut down. They weren't ready for the freezing temperatures that came there. And from what I've been gathering, too, they haven't prepared for another one. But what's the grid situation in New England? And I'm just wondering, there's got to be a job component too for the union as well, right?
Yeah. So the grid in Maine is fairly robust. I mean, you know, obviously we're used to a range of temperatures. The only really issue we had was the ice storm we had back in the I think it was the late 90s. But infrastructure is actually another branch of the IBEW. It's like the outside electrical guys. We tend to handle the substations, the transformers, and things like that. When it comes to, basically, we say anything, you know, inside the fence is kind of our area. But the solution, and what a lot of people have been talking about for years, but once again, it comes down to cost, is microgrids, where, you know, if a grid goes down, it's just a small area, and they're all self-sustaining. Especially with the way batteries have increased and the way batteries, we did a couple of these a few years back where they just bring in these huge connexes full of batteries, and they're already like pre-wired inside the connex, and then they, you know, set them on the site, and then we hook them all up, and then it's like an on-demand thing where they charge them when the rates are low, and then if the rates get high and they need to boost the grid, they pull off these batteries. And the big thing is you can do that all over the place, right? And if you do it a bunch of them in a small area, then you don't have to worry about the grid going down for everybody. The grid can go down for a small community, and it's so much easier to fix when thousands of linemen show up worried about, you know, in the transmission lines to the whole city of Houston or something like that. So that's one of the big things with the future of the grid.
Yeah, and people do not realize how much we depend on our power until it's gone. Until it's gone. That's the scary part. We're so dependent on our devices today. That's crazy. I want to get into organizing and making sure that unions are as strong as they can be. And Justin, you know, we got a pro-union guy in the White House. We have a pro-union guy as labor secretary. We're seeing some turnaround with the NLRB. Things are moving in the right direction. How is it in the state of Maine? Because, you know, there's a number of parts in the country that are not like that. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, so I actually was, so before I became the training director, I was the organizer for 567. And, you know, sometimes people talk about, You know, we're not a right-to-work state, which is huge. If once a state becomes a right-to-work state, it's not great for the unions. But one of the real things, I mean, one of the really big things about organizing is the job market. Like, if we have work, you know, we could put you to work and we could give you a higher rate than you're getting. Plus, our health insurance is free and it's amazing. I think our health insurance is probably the best in the state of Maine. It's a $400 deductible for an entire family. That's the organizing to us. It's like, if you have the jobs, the people will come. And a lot of times it's maybe, you know, we lose when it was real slow back in between 2010 to 2012. You know, we lost a lot of members because, you know, within their own right, I mean, they got to feed their families. But then when this stuff starts booming, we get a lot of people that come back. And you also got to kind of, you know, adapt to the times. Like when it was, like I said, we used to be the paper mill local. So like when we started transitioning out of that, you know, the wages that we were getting for these paper mills were just unprecedented and we couldn't compete in a commercial market. So we developed like a tiered rate system for different size jobs and, you know, adapting and changing is kind of that. I mean, you can look at like the local governments and you can look at the federal government and sometimes that impacts it. But sometimes it's about like we have great relationships with our contractors. Like we get along really well with our contractors and it's a great relationship. And that helps a lot because it's, you know, there's some unions that, you know, they supply these the contractors, but some of them don't get along really well. And it's just that makes it a hard road when you feel like you're fighting against a non-union and you're fighting against your own contractors. And I think that's a big thing that really helps.
Well, I know they're pushing the PRO Act, the Protect the Right to Organize. That's going to lift all boats and it's going to get rid of those right to work states, which, I mean, is half of America right now. And here's a statistic I want to share with you. There are 60 million people in the country. Now, the AFL-CIO has 12.5 million people. That's all the unions. There's 50-plus unions that are part of the AFL-CIO. There's 60 million people in America that would join a union if given the opportunity. Do you realize what that would do to America, Justin?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, that's like kind of like I said, the way I grew up was, you know, we lived in a paper mill town. And we weren't well off. We weren't poor, but we lived in that middle class. But not because of the wages, because of the benefits. Like my parents never really had to worry about like if somebody got sick or somebody needed braces or you know somebody needed you know whatever contacts or you know all that stuff was paid for. So even though you know the wages weren't, it was a great living. You know, it was a great, great way to grow up. But that was the thing, was that stuff was there. And the pension was there, you know. Unfortunately, my dad passed away a few years ago. But when he did, his pension was still there. And so that got to be passed on to the generation. You know, so all that work that he put in, you know, was that money was still there. And so, you know, the kids benefited. And so it's just, it would be an amazing turning point for America if – you know, I hear these horror stories about like Amazon and things like that. And these people working there. And it's just, how can that company make that much money, you know, supply that much stuff without these people making an amazing living?
I hear you. Well, I can speak to that too. I come from a steelworker family. My dad was a steelworker. Now he passed away 30 years ago. And my mom passed away 15 years ago. And that during that 15-year period, she had all the benefits that the Steelworkers Union provided. 15 years, 100%. And that's something you don't. Yeah, there's a lot of people that do not have that advantage because they don't have the union connected to them. So I'm going to end on that positive note. Justin Walsh, Training Director for IBEW 567, 567. Doc, any parting words here before I wrap it up, Justin?
Nope. Thanks for having me on, though.
Okay. Well, you keep up the fight. Stay in touch and stay safe. All right, brother?
Sounds good.
Fun guy to talk to you again, Justin Walsh. He's the Training Director for the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, 567, out of Portland, Maine. Definitely excited about the future when it comes to electric vehicles, charging stations, solar, you name it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Mr. Andrew Tinkham, on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. Consumer information, lots of it. That's coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit SurveyandBallotSystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two right now. And welcome to the show, Andrew Tinkham. Andrew's been with us for a number of years. He is here on behalf of the Office of the Ohio Consumer Council. OCC.ohio.gov is their website. A couple things we're going to get into is a House bill in the state of Ohio, House Bill 117. And also some disconnections. You don't want disconnected electricity. No, 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 no. And also, hard to believe, maybe warm now, but you got to start thinking about preparing for the winter heating season. Andrew Tinkham, welcome back to America's Workforce. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having an office on your show today.
So let's get into this House bill here. And this is a situation that's kind of ugly in the state of Ohio. It involves a piece of legislation. Maybe you can kind of recap that and tell us what's going on, because it involved a scandal, an FBI raid, indictments, kind of ugly. Why don't you just pick it up from there?
Yeah, this story seems to just keep going on and on. It's like you said, it's hard to believe it's been 2 years since this all started. So, Ohio legislators introduced two bills recently, Senate Bill 117 and House Bill 351, to further repeal one of the customer-funded subsidy provisions obtained in House Bill 6. These companion bills would repeal the coal power plant bailout AEP, AES, which was formerly Dayton Power and Light, and Duke got through the passage of House Bill 6 for two dirty, uneconomical coal power plants. You know, one is in Southeast Ohio. The crazy thing is one is in Indiana, which one that's not even located here in Ohio.
It is crazy.
The bailout, and it's wild. It's to think that the Ohioans would be paying for a plant that's not even located here. The bailout could cost Ohioans $700 million by 2030 while these plants dump tons of pollution in the air. Ohio's regulated electric consumers have been paying up to $1.50 a month since January of 2020. Towards these coal power plants, and more than $140 million has been collected to date. Now, Senate Bill 117 and House Bill 351 would end the subsidy on consumers' electric bills, and the nice thing is it would promptly refund the money already collected back to consumers. Now, OCC has testified seven times against House Bill 6 and eight times to repeal it, which included testimony against the coal power plant subsidy in House Bill 6. House Bill 128, which was passed in March, removed many provisions that were harmful to consumers in House Bill 6 that the OCC did not support. So we're glad Ohioans will see possibly a partial repeal of the legislation tainted by the undue utility influence. Now, what's great is making Ohioans subsidize AEP, Duke, and AES for the OVAC coal plants may be the worst of the bad subsidies from tainted House Bill 6. And that's because the subsidy charges for utility coal plants, and it's a double whammy for consumers because it's that higher electric bills plus more pollution in the air. So we certainly support both pieces of legislation in Senate Bill 117 and House Bill 351. And we certainly hope that when the legislature returns from summer break here in a few weeks, these two bills are taken up and we see some traction on these and hopefully get them passed and get these charges off customers' electric bills and refund customers for what they already paid.
And you pointed out customers have been paying up to $1.50 a month since January of 2020. I take it that's an average and that'll be taken off the bills eventually then? Is that right?
Well, yeah, first the legislation would have to be passed to take it off. And it's up to $1.50. It just depends on the electric company.
Right.
And because there's different mechanisms to determine that price. So just to give an example, like AEP customers have been paying $1.07 per month.
Yeah, there was a lot to unwind here because this was a major scandal, got national attention. There was like $60 million in bribes. And as a result, FirstEnergy, the main company, was going to gain, I believe, well over $1 billion. So it was a good investment on their behalf. $60 million in, and they come back with over $1 billion. Okay, I get it. All right, let's move on to these disconnections. What's going on here?
Yeah, the Office of the Ohio Consumers Council, Advocates for Basic Legal Equality, Legal Aid Society of Southwest Ohio, Ohio Poverty Law Center, and ProSeniors filed a joint motion regarding Ohio utilities disconnection practices. AEP, with its high disconnection of consumers, was especially a focus of this motion. The group called for the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio to investigate AEP Ohio's disconnections, credit and collection practices, along with halting AEP service disconnections until the investigation is concluded. Each year, utilities, both natural gas and electric companies, have to submit a disconnections report to the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. And this report just came out in June. And what we found is from September 2020 through May 2021, AEP disconnected more than 124,000 customers, which accounted for 2/3 of the total electric disconnections in Ohio. Further, AEP underreported disconnections in their informal disconnection reports provided to the PUCO between September 2020 and June 2021, indicating that there were a little over 66,000 disconnections during this time, when in fact AEP disconnected more than 124,000. So, that's a little less than half, and almost double than what they reported. Now, obviously, this was during a time, looking back at last fall when COVID cases were rising throughout Ohio, and many consumers were facing health and financial troubles. With AEP deploying smart meters over the past few years, disconnections have become very easy for the utility, for companies like AEP to disconnect customers. In the past, you used to have to dispatch a technician to go out and turn it off at the home. But now it can be done remotely, either through a computer program or someone hitting a switch in a remote office to disconnect customers. So it's a lot easier to disconnect consumers this day and age. We're wondering if that's part of why AEP's numbers are high, because they've been deploying these smart meters over the years. So in response to AEP's high number of disconnections and energy disconnections, the coalition calls on the PUCO to first investigate AEP's practices for consumer disconnection, credit and collections, and use of smart meters due to AEP's disconnection reporting. Second, we would like to see and suspend AEP's disconnection of consumers during the investigation, or at least in a secondary alternative, suspend its disconnections through a smart meter. Third, suspend all electric and natural gas disconnections during the upcoming winter heating season. Or as a secondary alternative, continue the PIP protections similar to last year and expand the winter reconnect order to ban remote electric disconnections through the smart meters. And finally, require electric and natural gas utilities to assess and report impacts of disconnections in their service areas, especially any disproportionate impact on diverse segments of the population. You know, when these numbers are reported, they only provide what's in a service area. So you really can't get a deep dive. Is there a certain city or certain part of the town or certain service area where there is a large number of disconnections? You know, additionally, the motion addresses the energy justice for pandemic-related concerns, and then those concerns obviously continue for at-risk Ohioans, including low-income and minority communities in the working poor. So in the interest of the energy justice, certainly we would want to see the PCO address the Consumers Party's motions in this case without any delay, especially as we're heading into winter.
Sure. Energy justice. That's a new term that I learned today. That's interesting. Yeah. All right. Going into winter here, we're coming up to the Labor Day weekend. We're going into fall in a couple of weeks. Things are starting to change, and this is a very, very good time to think about getting your home ready for winter. Maybe you could run down a couple of things for our listeners. Go ahead.
Yeah, definitely. And it's hard to believe, and it's been so hot and humid over the past few weeks, at least here in Ohio. It's hard to think about winter and snow. But before you know, in a couple months, that is a possibility. So September and October is a great time to prepare your home for the winter, you know, when the temperature starts to moderate. First thing that we would recommend is look into having your furnace, having a tune-up. Tune-ups are great for a furnace because it makes sure your furnace will run well during the winter heating season. You shouldn't have any concerns about it failing when it's cold outside. So definitely look into that. Like September and October is a great time to have that done. We do suggest that you keep your thermostat at 68 to 70 degrees. I mean, that's a good temperature to keep the bill somewhat low, but keep your home warm. If you can set back your thermostat 5 degrees, especially at night for up to 8 hours while you're sleeping under the covers, that can help save you money during the winter months. Also, we recommend checking your furnace filter. Furnace filters, when they get dirty, they become a barrier and allows less of the heated air that you produce through your furnace to move throughout your home. So check your furnace filter each month. If it's not dirty, you don't need to replace it. But if it is dirty, replace it with a new filter. Another great thing to do for the winter is look for any places you have air leakage around your home. And that can be around doors, windows, outlets. Once again, September and October is a great time to do that work when you can have windows and doors open, whether you're caulking around windows or replacing weather stripping, because those are areas where you can get a lot of air leakage. And the positive with sealing your home with weather stripping and caulking is that it's going to make your home more comfortable. So you'll have less drafts, and it should save money on your bill because you're not allowing that cold air to infiltrate your home and raise your electric bill, you know, or your natural gas bill, however you heat during the winter. And finally, if you have drafty windows, look into insulation kits. They have plastic insulation kits that you can purchase at the hardware store. They're relatively cheap. They're clear so you can see out the window while not allowing those drafty winds come through those, you know, penetrate through those windows and making your home colder. So look into those. Our office has a lot more tips on our website at www.occ.ohio.gov. I know it's hard to think about winter. I don't think I'm ready for the cold temperatures, but once again, it'll be here before we know it.
Yeah, good advice. I just want to throw this out, too. If you think that your furnace needs updating, do that now, because there is a supply shortage in America. And I know several HVAC techs, and they're telling me, for instance, like air conditioning parts, there's still people waiting for air conditioning parts, and they may not have them for maybe 2 or 3 weeks. Now, the weather may change by then, but because of the supply shortage, you better start thinking about this now. It's really, really important. But all good advice. And all of this is posted on the OCC website, occ.ohio.gov. The Twitter handle for the organization is at OCC4, that's the number 4, Consumers, OCC for Consumers. Andrew, great job. Thank you so much. Have a good Labor Day weekend. We'll talk to you down the road, all right?
It sounds good. Thanks, Flash. You too.
All right. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, it's the UAW and Survey and Ballot Systems. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.